Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Hello, everybody, and I just have to say as a side note, today marks my 9th anniversary of hosting the Born to Talk radio show. Now it's a podcast. The first 3 years it wasn't a podcast, but I have loved every moment of this, and today is no exception. I'm so happy to tell you about my guest, Ileana Balintz. She is the founder and executive director of the nonprofit Pals and Pets, and the N. And I'm going to spell this. It's PALSNPETS, and I'll make sure that you know how to get to that website. But I want to just say welcome to the show, Ileana. I'm so happy to have you with me today.
Thank you, Marcia. I'm really excited to be here. I'm very honored to be on your show. Happy 9 years.
Thank you. Isn't that amazing when you look back at what your life has been like? So that's me, but this is about you. So please, you know, just tell us a little bit about yourself so we can get to know you just a little bit.
Sure. Well, my name's Ileana Balintz, and I was born and raised in Los Angeles. I went to middle school, high school, elementary school here, and I've got three sisters and my mom and dad. And growing up, half the time, we actually spent a lot of time in Mexico with our grandparents in a little small town called Tecate, which is right on the border of the United States and Mexico, about an hour and a half east of Tijuana. And it was really beautiful growing up here in the States and spending most weekends and summers and winter breaks in Mexico with our grandparents. They had a lot of animals there. And I went to college at Cal State Long Beach. I didn't quite finish because I got myself into some modeling. I did some modeling with Wilhelmina Models, and that took me over to beautiful South Beach, Miami in Florida, where I spent some time modeling and traveling and learned how to kiteboard out in the ocean. And then I found myself back home in Los Angeles about 14 years ago. And from there, you know, I was working a few different jobs here and there, kind of figuring out what I wanted to do after my modeling career until I like to say Pals and Pets kind of dropped into my life. And since about 2020, I've been running my organization Pals and Pets here in Los Angeles.
So that was going to ask you that. So it started in 2020. All right. So It's so cool, and I just want to tell all of you, if you want to just visit her website, it's a cool website, and it's spelled as just as you might think, PALSNPETS.org. This is a nonprofit. So what inspired you to start Pals and Pets?
Well, I like to say my whole life and all of my life experience. Initially, I guess one moment was kind of the awakening of Pals and Pets. Around 2017, I was in Pasadena, and I was walking the street, and across the street, I had noticed a person who was living on the street. There was this man, and he had a dog. And my initial thought was, how could this person take care of a dog? And I had originally thought how, you know, he could hardly take care of himself. Right. And in that moment, while I was having this thought, I saw a woman that was about to pass him and didn't. She ended up stopping and talking to this guy, which I later learned his name was Ray, and petting his dog. And in that moment, my whole mind just shifted because I thought that interaction was really positive. And I also thought if it wasn't for that dog, that woman probably would have just walked on past him. So yes. I got curious and I went over there because I did see that this guy had a big sign that had some language on it. And as I was approaching, I noticed that this woman was trying to give the dog a bone. And the dog was just sitting there looking at her owner until the owner nodded and said, it's okay. And then the dog took the bone, which I thought was fascinating because originally my idea is, oh, this person's not taking care of the pet. It's probably not eating. And I know if it was my dog and someone offered him a bone, he wouldn't wait for my okay. He just took it. So I just knew the relationship between the two was a real special one. And so what I learned from Ray is the man's name, and Jane was his dog's name. And what his sign said was that he wanted to go into shelter for himself, but shelters don't allow pets. And he had originally rescued his dog from an abandoned building, but in reality, it was his dog that rescued him. Mm-hmm. And so when I learned this, there was something inside of me that that just felt not right. I couldn't understand why a shelter wouldn't allow a person with a pet. And when Ray continued to tell me a little bit about his story, which he said he was struggling with alcoholism and he curbed his alcoholism because he wanted to be responsible for his pet, that things get tough out on the streets and sometimes he doesn't have things and, you know, sometimes stealing or committing crimes would have been something he would have done. But now that he has Jane, he didn't want to risk going to jail and losing his pet. And so I thought this was really this was very powerful that he was changing his ways to the positive because of the love of his pet. And so I do like to talk a little bit about what I was going through at this time when I was talking to Ray, because I was struggling with severe alcoholism at the time. And I used the word severe appropriately. I do like to get a little bit into the details just to get people an idea of what I was going through, because at that time I didn't know how I was going to get through that, and a lot of people around me didn't think I was either. So I had experience a lot of – I've been in jail because of my drinking, broken relationships, my family disowned me. I was in treatment centers, outpatient centers, DUIs, 5150s because of the amount of alcohol. I would go a bit seemingly insane, or because I ingested way too much alcohol that they thought I was trying to commit suicide. And so I was really struggling. I was in a lot of pain and I was very lost. So when I heard Ray say that because of the love of his pet, he would curb his alcoholism, I knew how hard it was and how powerful that bond was. And nothing in my life at the time felt right. But when I heard that he wanted to go in shelter and they wouldn't allow pets, I knew there was something not right about that. And that was the first time I was pretty certain something had to be done about it.
Wow. Wow, Ileana, that's really, I'm always having, that's very emotional to hear and very, very powerful to hear that how you have turned your life around because of Ray and his dog. And I have personally had experience. I worked for several years as a volunteer when my friends, the Biscettos, lived here, and they started an organization called Share Hope USA, and we would go into encampments. In fact, it was where I was born and raised, because like you, I was born and raised in Los Angeles as well, and this area had been bought out by the airport, and so there was an encampment. And I would say that 70% of the people in that encampment all had dogs. you know. And so when we would come and help feed the homeless, by all means, we were feeding their dogs as well, because it was so important. So I get that bond, and I just, your background into what you've done is just powerful. Can you just take us through the process of how you turned that vision into a reality when you decided that you were going to start this organization?
Yeah, of course. So at that time, that was the only feeling that felt right to me. And so I got real curious, and I really had nothing to lose at that time. And so I'll tell you a little bit about the mission of Pals and Pets. So our mission is to increase access in interim housing for people experiencing homelessness who already have pets. And here in Los Angeles, 18% of our unsheltered population have companion animals with them on the streets. And prior to our programs, when an individual was connected to a homeless shelter, they would be asked to abandon their pets in order to get into a shelter for themselves. And most of the time, they would not do that. They would end up staying on the streets with their pets rather than going into shelter for themselves. And so Pals and Pets, what we do is we partner with interim housing, and we offer them on-site pet staff, veterinary care, dog training, and grooming, so that people on the streets can enter together with their pets and they can both be housed together. And so the process, you know, started with that awakening, I call it, that feeling I had when I met Ray and Jane. And that was at the end of 2017. And then around 2018, I just did a little Google research about homeless people and pets. And I only came across one organization called Pets of the Homeless that offered veterinary care to people on the streets. But that didn't seem to be a solution for people and pets together who wanted to enter shelter. And so from there, I thought, well, do you start a for-profit or a nonprofit? And I looked into both, and nonprofit seemed to be the best way to go. I looked into the 501c3. We received that about 4 months later, and then I didn't really know what to do with it at that time. So I just did a little bit of my own research. I went into shelters here in Los Angeles, and I just asked questions, you know, why don't you allow pets? You know, what's the reason? And it was due to funding, and also case managers are so busy working with the individual, connecting them and integrating them back into our society, that adding a pet into the mix would be a whole set of other resources. And so I built a little board, just some people who I approached talking about what I had experienced. Anytime I saw a person on the street who had a pet, I would go and talk to them, and it was the same thing. They all said it's traumatic out here, and even if you're not traumatized, living on the streets will traumatize you. And just the mere fact of having a pet to take your mind off of it, to do something silly that makes you laugh, to just take it for a walk, gets your mind off of things. And so I got connected to council members and a couple state senators, and with my research, I was telling them what I believed what would work in interim housing. And so I got our first opportunity in 2020 here in Venice at ABH Shelter, and we started our first programs there. And so what was really neat is what I like to say about Pals and Pets is, as I was developing and growing Pals and Pets, the doors just kept seemingly to open for me. And I was being told that I could never do this. And, of course, coming from my background of being a severe alcoholic and not really trusting myself, and, you know, I never finished college, I didn't really believe I could do it either. But there was just some sort of fire in me that just didn't care and just kept on going. So as I was developing this, you know, I didn't have a relationship with my family, but I started to talk to my father, and I started to talk to him about pals and pets. And as I was developing that relationship with him, he began to tell me that I was reminding him of his father, my grandfather, Abuelito Carlos. And through our talks, I started remembering my time with my grandfather in Mexico, and he would always have many, many dogs, street dogs, which was unusual in Mexico because at that time, dogs were used for protection and, you know, they might have gotten food scraps, whatever was left over from the family. And so I remember asking him why he did, and he would tell me stories when he was young that he was an orphan as a kid and he slept many nights on the streets with the street dogs, and that's who saved him and that's why he rescued him back. So I realized when I met Ray and Jane that it wasn't just my curiosity, but the relationship between Ray and Jane was very familial to me. It was the way my grandfather was with his animals and how we were raised with animals as well.
Wow. Well, what do you think makes, and let me ask you this because I am curious. I am looking at your website. I would presume, this is a presumption, so you'll need to correct me, that the majority of these animals are dogs, but are they ever cats?
Oh, yes. Yep, most of them are dogs. We do have a lot of cats. Sometimes they're snakes. Rats, birds, we have tortoises, frogs, and one time someone tried to bring in a skunk. Where he got that, I'm not sure, but that was definitely not allowed.
That didn't work, huh? God. Oh, my goodness.
Well,
what do you think makes the connection between people and their pets so vital for their overall well-being and sense of purpose?
Wow. You know, there really is something about animals in the way they connect with us that other human beings can't. So I actually just recently read a research report from the Human-Animal Bond Research Institute that stated, I believe it was done last year, that we save $23 billion in healthcare costs due to pet ownership. And that's from minimizing office visits to obesity to mental health costs and anxiety for children between 8 and 10, for veterans who have PTSD and their treatments. Right. And so physically in a health way, pets are very helpful in healing. And then, of course, like the obvious, you know, if someone's blind, we have service dogs or any type of disability. But particularly for our population that we serve for pals and pets, for people experiencing homelessness, what I hear from them in their background when they open up to us is, you know, they come from very traumatic situations. They've either been abandoned or neglected or abused in some form or not cared for well or have mental health issues. And so the reflection of stability, emotional stability, or love is a little different. So if they're on the streets or suffering or struggling, when they need a pet, they instantly feel that unconditional love and that support or that protection or that companionship. And when an individual feels that type of love, they don't want to let it go, especially since they've never felt it before. And it's just really magical. And of course, I think lots of pet owners, you know, around can, you know, you end up making friends that way, right? Like even if you go to the dog park and your pet dog gets along, all of a sudden you made a new friend that you probably would have never thought. And so
exactly.
They really connect us. They connect us back together. They connect us to other people. They're social creatures and they help us to become much more social with each other. And so
I'm sure. What do you think some of the biggest misconceptions that the general public has about unhoused pet owners?
I think it's the misconception that I initially had, is that if a person can't care for themselves, how can they care for a pet? And
right. That's
just a thought if you're on the streets that you can't care. I mean, you know, an individual on the streets, clearly if they're still walking around and talking, they're able to care for themselves in a certain way. And our people do whatever they eat, they feed their pets. And so I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions.
Mm-hmm. So sounds like you've worked with a lot of different people. Who are some of the people and the organizations that have been your biggest supporters and just have supported you along this journey?
Yeah, so we partner with multiple different interim housings currently. And so our two biggest partners are Hope of the Mission and Los Angeles Family Housing. And they just love having us there to support them with their pets because they know how powerful pets are and healing are to their participant and how important they are. But we also partner with organizations such as People and Pets Better Together here in Los Angeles. And it's interesting because our name is Pals and Pets and they're People and Pets. And so it's almost like we were meant to be together.
Yes. And that's funny.
So they have I work closely with Christy Schilling, who is the co-founder and executive director there, and she just has a heart of gold. This is her life and her love, and it really shows and how she works and offers her support. She has numerous partnerships with veterinary care, and she'll come out with us in encampments. And the real special thing about our partnership and relationship is one of the most important programs that we can offer is veterinary care to our participants because, one, they don't have it, right? And, of course, basic veterinary care for animals is important. But in reality, it's when we offer these programs and we can get them vet care day of or next day, which even I can't get vet care day of or next day for my own private veterinarian. But the reason why we work really hard on doing that is because it's about developing the relationship with each individual and helping them feel supported. So if we care for the one thing they love the most, which is their pets, and we show them that care through immediate and consistent vet care or pet education or any type of grooming or dog training, they begin to open up to us a little more and they begin to trust us a little more. And that's when we can develop the relationship and the foundation of trust with them, which is vital for their transition into our society. And So we really value our partnerships, such as People and Pets Better Together, very much so, and other organizations that really put their heart on the line and do the work. And even though we all have different missions, having that understanding of each other's missions for the greater whole is super important. And so organizations like those really, really make a difference in our collaborations.
How do these homeless people afford this veterinary care? Obviously, they can't spend that kind of money to, I know what I spend to take my cat to the vet. So who covers those costs?
So we do fundraising. We also get funding from the state, and that was a whole other journey that I took part in as well. We have human welfare, and then we have animal welfare organizations. And there's funding specifically for human welfare, and then there's funding specifically for animal welfare. And the reason why it's separate is because of reporting. So if you're working with people, you report on how many people you house, how many people you feed, how many services you get them connected to. If you're reporting for animal welfare, you're reporting on how much vaccines you gave or how many pets got spay-neutering or how many pets got vet care, right? So with us, Paws and Pets is a bridge between human welfare and animal welfare. And our population is controlled by the interim housing. So when we began, there was no funding specific to what we were doing. And I think, you know, when I say just the doors were opening, I had in the beginning had a board member who connected me to a state senator. His name at the time was State Senator Hertzberg, who also was noticing that quite a bit of people on the streets had pets. And they did want to go into shelter, but shelters didn't allow pets. So he thought maybe allocating some pet funds into interim housing would help address the unsheltered population of people with pets to enter. And so I supported that bill, and that bill actually passed, and that's where we get some of our state funding. But for us, we do focus mostly on private funding, just because there's just not a lot of variety for supporting our cause, since we're doing a little bit of both with human welfare and animal welfare. Yeah. And so that's how we provide our services with vet care.
Gosh, I'm listening to you share your story, and I can visualize you, frankly, speaking on a local news program. I don't know if you've ever had access to any of our local news channels, but man, I'm thinking about who I might know, because it seems like this would be such an ideal way to promote, because of course you're looking for donations. That's very important. You have a donation button on your website. But I think that, I can feel the passion in what you're saying. I can feel it, and I know that the people that are benefiting by this can also feel it. So what would you say is the most rewarding part of what you do?
I mean, all of it, really. It's a reflection of who I am in my past life. You know, when I look in the eyes of the people that I serve, I see myself at one point in my life when I was struggling with alcoholism, lost and just not knowing, not really feeling like I wanted to live, because I was in so much pain and hardship. And so when we go into our interim shelters and, if I go in and I meet one of, we call them our participants, our people that are being sheltered in our housings. When I see one of our participants going through a tough time, whether it was because they went on a run, whether it was drinking or using, or they're just not getting into permanent housing long enough, or just being in the shelters can be stressful, just being mixed in with a bunch of other people that you just don't know. And when they're in an emotional space where they can't handle it anymore, when I speak with them and I feel them, I remember what that was like. And when I speak with them, I express how I was feeling at one time in my life. And when they look at me and they know that I know, it's like the walls drop. You know, they probably
they
at one
you.
Time, as they, yeah, they trust me because of how I express my experience, and maybe they can't find the words to express their feelings because of what they're going through. But when I do, they know it's true. And so then there's this light in their eyes. And there's a couple times where I've heard them say, "You're one of us." And it doesn't matter what I'm wearing or if I have a car. Maybe at one point they thought I was just doing this out of the goodness of my heart. But when they know that I know, there's this little light in their eyes. And that's one of the most rewarding things, because for a long time in my life, I thought my struggles weren't all mine. And I really was in a lot of anger and a lot of pain and a lot of hate. And I really didn't want to live. And I didn't know why I was suffering so much, and I didn't know how to get out of it. And so now I know why. I know why I went through all that, and I know why I had to remember all of it, and it is all worth it. And if I had to do it over again, I would do it all over again exactly the same way.
Do you have, I can't imagine the answer is going to be no to this. So do you also have a pet?
Yes, I do.
Of course. Wait, of course you do. What kind of a, what do you have? Do you have a dog?
I have a dog. He's a big dog. Yeah. He's about 100
okay.
pounds. His name is Romeo.
Wear out now.
Romeo, wear out now. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He's
That's
my
cool.
love.
You know, there's just, I mean, I'm going to tell you, as you and I are speaking, because obviously this is only an audio show, so nobody can see what you're doing or what I'm doing, but I'm looking at my screen while I'm speaking to you. My laptop is laying on my desk. There's a blanket on top of it, and this kitty is laying on top of that, sound asleep, right next to where I am, and she's my buddy, you know, and I appreciate what she means in my life, but having experienced this homeless encampment all those years ago and recognizing what these dogs, because they were exclusively dogs, what they meant to the dog owners. I mean, it was so obvious what it was like, their sense of love, and you could see it and you could feel it, and we felt just as dedicated to feeding their animals as we did themselves. And when they get into interim housing, maybe this is not in place any longer, but it seems to me, this was quite some time ago now, that we went to some kind of a shelter, an interim shelter in Long Beach, that allowed pets and participants to be there. Is that still in place, or is that gone?
I'm not sure. You know, there
okay.
were a few that allowed pets, and now even more so. The
word's
Good. Definitely been getting around. There's a lot more awareness on the need of people and pets and the bond, the human-animal bond, and how healing it is and helpful for, especially for people experiencing homelessness. So a lot more interim housing has opened the doors, especially since there was a grant that has passed in the state of California. Actually, it's the first state that passed these grants to allocate funds in shelters. So there's a lot more support, but they're definitely mm-hmm. needs to be a bit of a system change, because this seems like it's becoming the norm. So housing does need to learn how to implement new policies and new support systems within to help both.
Are they limited, Ileana, are they limited how long they can stay in this interim housing? Is there a start and a stop?
It's about
Or does it go, just depends?
It depends. It depends on how quickly they can get into permanent housing. As soon as there is an option open for them, they will be moved forward, but it's approximately a year. So when we work with our participants, we really get to know them, their pets, and their relationship with their pets.
There's a lot of, I remember there was a lot of veterans that were also part of this as well, and they had services, but they didn't take advantage of them. They were, like you mentioned, they were perhaps alcoholics, drug addicts, whatever, you know, just trying to cope with life, and then they would have this dog, and like you said, it was like their savior. But it's a pretty serious problem, and it's not just exclusive to the Los Angeles area. I know this, it's nationwide. So I guess what I'm wondering about you is, how do you personally stay motivated and excited about all of this?
Well, it's always changing, right? And for me, I like that. I'm not the type of person who can do the same thing over and over again. So each and every day is always different. And it takes creativity to understand each individual and where they are, and also lead a team on how to best support our individuals. So really what keeps me excited and motivated is the difference we see in our people through their pets, and what we get to see because we are with them for about a year, and we get to know who they are, who their pets are over time. Pets can be a mirror to people's mental health. And so sometimes we get to see an individual who may be exhibiting anxiety in different ways because of their pets, thinking, oh, their pet needs vet care. And once we clear that the pet's healthy and they continue to exhibit, then we can involve a mental health team to support them based on the information we can relate to them through the relationship with their pet. And because we see each individual once a week, we really get to know them more than their case managers on site, which might meet with them once every other month. What really keeps me motivated is, you know, we do offer multiple services, right? And we can try to describe how helpful our organization is based on how many services of people we serve a month. So we can give 250 services to about 150 people and their pets a month, which seem like a lot. But it doesn't really tell you what the real measurement is. So I'll tell you a little story about this young woman at one of our shelters. And she's at a woman's shelter, and she's young. She's about 19. She got kicked out of her mother's place. Her mother was mentally ill, and she ended up in one of our shelters. And she has a pet tortoise, and he's a pretty big pet tortoise. And I like to say that this tortoise is an extrovert, and he's an introvert. And the reason why I say this is because when we first met her, she's an introvert. She's very shy. She will get down on the ground and put her head down. But then her Toro will come out of his house. I say running because he's walking very fast for a tortoise, with his head stretched out all the way, and starts trying to climb on her and just watches her every move.
Oh, my
gosh. So active. It's a really beautiful relationship. And so, of course, she needed some veterinary care for her tortoise. And it ended up being specialty care. And we usually offer basic veterinary care. But because we knew the relationship between her and her tortoise was really special, we went ahead and okayed specialty care. So she would never make eye contact with us when we would meet with her. She went to a vet, which was a private vet. And afterwards, she said she wanted to send me an email. And I thought, oh, this is different. Let me give her a call. So I gave her a call, and she was very communicative on her experience at the veterinarian, telling me that she really didn't like, and she was very calm. She didn't like the way they handled Spikey with the tortoise's name, that they picked him up, they give him this injection, he threw up, and the way she was just very descriptive and clear. And I thought, wow, this is the most I've ever heard her talking. And she seemed very certain. And so she didn't want to go back there, even though it was very difficult to find specialty care for a tortoise. And so we thought, okay. So we spoke to her and said, okay, well, why don't you try to find a veterinarian that you feel comfortable with. You can give them all the information, and then we'll support you in the funding. Just let us know. And so she recently did this. And so each week we would go and visit her, and she would talk to us a little more and more. And one day I was talking with her, and she was making some movements with her hands. And I asked her how she was feeling. Is she okay? Does she feel a little nervous? And she asked me why I asked. And I let her know because of her body language. So I think because of our support, because she began feeling more comfortable and communicating with us in regards to her tortoise and her tortoise's needs, she expressed to me that she used to do phone therapy and that she decided to change phone therapy to in-person therapy because she wanted the therapist to see her body language to help her more. And that's something she couldn't describe over the
intuitive.
Yeah. So when, you know, our services don't really describe the value of the connection and the trust and the healing and development that happens because we support our individuals with their pets, and then they end up transferring that relationship elsewhere to benefit them, you know, whether it's in therapy, whether it's in getting a job so that they can pay for monthly medicine for their pets, whether it's in helping others in the community, helping, like supporting their pets, or taking more of an initiative to get into permanent housing because they no longer want their pets to live in a shelter, right? So there's all these other ways that the support and relationship helps an individual grow and become more self-sufficient within themselves.
Wow. So this sounds like a lot. And so I'm just curious, what's the most challenging part of this and how do you move through that?
Yeah, I think the most challenging part is because we are bridging between human welfare and animal welfare, and we're on site with interim housing, which is human welfare. There are certain times where everything's not picture perfect, right? Most of our people take well care of their pets, but there are times where they just can't. And sometimes the pet is struggling or suffering. And, you know, we give the most support that we can. And, you know, we sometimes get in the middle of interim housing communicating with us, well, if we remove the pet, it's going to traumatize the individual more. And, you know, we really don't want this to happen, but then we got to care for the pet's safety and well-being as well. So sometimes that can be challenging as well. And so we have to add extra support. Sometimes we have to wait to get more information. And it can be very, very difficult. And there are times when we do have to remove pets for the pet's safety, and that can be very difficult. And how do I move through it? Well, I mean, I have a very solid practice for my own groundedness and stability. I meditate every day. I do a lot of breath work. I'm an herbalist, so, you know, keeping balance and healthy and nourishment and some self-care is very important to me, especially after moving through my alcoholism. It's very important to me to have my emotions balanced so that I can offer this type of support to other people. But I think what also facilitates me to move through it as well is because I've had the patience and tolerance in my own healing, which took a lot, and forgiveness with myself, I have that capacity to offer to others. So as long as I continue to grow that capacity in my own healing and understanding, which is a lifelong journey, that's the way I balance and move through any type of challenges I go through within my organization.
That sounds really stable, and it's not always easy. But it's what keeps you grounded, and I can definitely hear that. I can feel it. So if I was to just shadow you, what does a day look like out in the field for you?
Wow, it's different every day.
Is it? Okay.
It is,
the weather
it is
can play
different.
A certain part. My God, have we had enough rain? Jeez, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It is different every day. I mean, usually just on a week, we try to keep, you know, 2 days for administrative work, which is our Mondays and Fridays. And then Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, we're out in the field. We step into each shelter. We're there about an hour or two. We'll check in with each participant and their pet, and that's where we coordinate vet care. We like to do pet events at each one of our shelters at least monthly, and whether it's like pet education or we'll do a big bathing and grooming event or we'll bring a vet on site. And we really like to do this just to create more engagement. And it doesn't only create engagement within the people who have pets, but it's engagement for people who don't have pets as well. And so, you know, developing that and putting all that together is fun. And there's a lot of research and writing, especially trying to storytell what we do and how we do it. Many times people think that we're some sort of rescue or we take pets away from people, or they don't quite understand that we're within the interim housing in order to allow people on the streets to come in with their pets. And so figuring out creative and unique ways on how to really represent our organization is always some fun things to do. We're also preparing, we're going to be working with a nearby private college who has I think it's like a year-long class that every student has to go through in order to graduate, which is called a social action. And they'll invite an organization, which we were invited to go through, and we'll discuss different challenges that we have within our organization, and students will get together throughout the semester in groups to try to address those challenges in creative ways. So that's something really exciting that we're getting involved in. But yeah, it can be anything from being in encampments to, you know, sometimes it's not all positive things that happen, right? Sometimes pets get hurt or pets get hit by cars or
right.
pets are, you know, elderly age and they're passing and our participants don't want to let them go. So we'll address situations like that. Or there are times when pets end up being abandoned and we have to rehome our pets. You know, everything that happens within our interim housing are a lot of the same things that happen in our community as a whole. We just
sure.
don't really get to see it, right, because it's all behind closed doors. So, yeah.
How many shelters do you actually work with?
We are currently partnered with 12 interim housings.
Okay, so help me with definitions, because if I feel slightly confused, maybe somebody else listening might also be confused. Is shelters and interim housing one and the same?
So, yes, that's a good question. When I refer to shelters, I'm referring to human homeless shelters. It's the housing.
Okay.
So, yep. So it's the first step when a person's on the street and they get connected to a homeless shelter. It's called an interim housing. It's in the interim before they get into a permanent housing. So it's for people, human homeless shelters.
Okay, so it is, you know, I think that's important to just sort of understand the distinction, because is the goal to really get these folks into permanent housing? Is that the ultimate goal?
That is the ultimate goal, yes.
Yes. Yeah, I would imagine that's true. So I imagine there's a whole lot that goes on behind the scenes to keep your organization running smoothly, and you're in charge, you're at the top of that food chain, so to speak. What is it like to just go to do this on a, you know, daily basis? What goes on?
Lots and lots and lots of communication and lots and lots and lots of flexibility.
Yeah, I bet.
Constant communication. You know, I really feel lucky in Pals and Pets ever since I started. Like I said, it seemed like the doors had always been opening. I really attracted some passionate people on our team. We have a small team, but our manager, her name's Annie, when she approached me via email a year or two ago, I think it was, and I got on an interview with her. She actually went and got her master's degree in Scotland, and her focus was on people experiencing homelessness with pets and the human-animal bond. And she either wanted to work with people experiencing homelessness who already had pets, or she wanted to work with prisoners who were working with pets. And so it was such a blessing for her to come because she works really hard. She understands things. I can put her in many different hats, and she really has a good heart and understanding of what we do. So that's really helpful. And then I have another team member by the name of Lindsay, who's been with us since we started. She first started as a volunteer, and now she's one of our staff. And she just understood it, you know, loves it, has the passion for it. So that's something that is really helpful, is to find good people who really understand their mission and believe it and are motivated and excited and know how to just really be creative on what works and what doesn't. Yeah, there's just a lot of communication, understanding and learning about the interim housings we work with. Each housing is different, so the case managers are different. Each one is managed differently, so trying to understand and educate them what we do in our services, because we are implementing a new system within their system. So there's a lot of training and education that goes on with pets in shelters. And then, you know, again, I think we got really lucky with our partners, People and Pets Better Together, and all their vet partners and Christy on how well we work together and the relationship she has. And so, and then all the partnerships with other organizations who that's the most crucial, is having partnerships with multiple organizations in order to help run it smoothly. Can't do none of this on your own, for sure.
No. And I was just thinking, you know, so you've got these people and you have their pets. Sometimes people don't get along with other people. Do pets sometimes not get along with other pets? How do you manage that?
That is a situation, for sure. You're right. People don't get along with people, and sometimes pets don't get along with pets. And definitely if the people don't get along with the people, their pets aren't going to get along with that person either.
Right.
And so we do sometimes have dog slides. Sometimes our people don't have their pets on leashes. And
okay.
We'll have pets get in fights. Here and now. And so that's what really makes our services important in the interim housing. We do offer a pet education to help on learning pet responsibilities, on leash laws, on safety reasons on why pets should be on leashes. We also educate on spay and neutering. Sometimes our people don't want to spay and neuter their pets, and it's because they just don't feel like it's right to take their organs out. And that can be tough sometimes if that's one of their beliefs, right? But we have an opportunity to expand their awareness beyond, you know, what's going on in their individual lives and educate them on the community of, like, overpopulation and how other pets are suffering because we need to control the population. And so we do offer a lot of education to each individual. But we also have a dog trainer on site each week.
Oh, that's good.
At our interim housings. And so we help with dog training, which most of our people are receptive to in order to address any type of aggression, or perhaps it's just mere socialization that these animals might need. But also coming from the streets, you know, especially with women who have dogs, their dogs are very protective because women aren't safe out in the streets most of the time. They might get violated, so their pets are very protective. And so when they come into shelter, it's hard to change that behavior. So we really work closely with them with our dog training program.
I bet. Do you have any projects and expansions that you're working on or you'd like to bring to life for the future as you look forward?
Yeah, so when I first started developing Pals and Pets, you know, I was thinking about, well, what's a solution, right? If people are on the streets on with their pets, you know, one solution is we got to get them off the streets together in housing. And so that's why we started our programs with an interim housing. But we would, like, an ultimate success in my mind when I was developing my programs, in my mind, was some sort of self-sufficiency, right? And so the interim housings are helping individuals to get into permanent housing, which means that they're going to have their forever home. And that's a mode of success for them. For me, what I thought was, you know, how can we get them, you know, to have, get interested or motivated in working? And so as I started our programs, especially our pet education, I started doing this class environment pet education that had 8 weeks, different units or different lessons. And at the end, we would talk about pet jobs, like dog walking or grooming or, you know, dog daycare. And I found that a lot of participants were interested in that. And we did support some participants in becoming dog walkers for apps like WAG or any other dog walking apps. Mm-hmm. So I looked a little more into this, and I was taking my dog at the time to dog daycares, and I actually learned that there was one dog daycare up in Portland that offered jobs to youth homeless in a homeless shelter, and that 80% of their youth who worked at the dog daycare would move on to other jobs because they learned some job skills, they got references, and then they were able to move into other jobs. So that really inspired me because my idea was once we hit partnerships with at least 10 shelters, that was the number I envisioned, and we developed these relationships with our participants and their pets and got to understand them, and we can educate them if they showed up, asked questions, engaged, helped each other, week after week, then I think we would be in a good place to perhaps, you know, in the future, partner or open up in a dog daycare and develop a job transitional program. And so that's one of my ultimate visions for Pals and Pets is to ultimately open up a dog daycare, and with our partnerships and our relationships with people and pets, on site at interim housing, that we can, you know, see who would be interested and willing to perhaps move into working at a dog daycare, which they already know their pets, they love their pets, they can be surrounded by other people who also like pets, they can make a little money, they can start learning, you know, what it's like to work in a dog daycare environment, and then, you know, that's the big idea. So
sure,
that's kind of
it makes
something
sense.
I'm really excited. Yeah.
You know, as a pet owner, and my pet does have some health issues, so I have to buy her food is prescription, wet and dry food, and I work with Chewy. And I was just thinking about, does Chewy have a component that would be I know that obviously they're a for-profit organization, but do they have do they also support somebody like what you guys do as far as pet food?
You know, I don't know. I'm pretty sure they do. I'm sure they
Wouldn't
have
that
some
be,
sort of giving
yes.
back or donation stuff.
Yes.
I know Petco does and other
okay.
companies as well
okay.
too. Yep.
All right, so you are, because, I mean, pet food is expensive, and
yes.
I was just thinking about what a partnership would be like you said, like a Petco or PetSmart or Chewy or any of these places, because it seems like that would be a really great relationship. And I just want to thank you for sharing your passion. It's so clearly understood that what you're doing is really not only serving those that you care for, but it's in your heart too. And I just want to thank you so much for sharing your story with our listeners, because you just never know how you've motivated somebody that might say, I need to check into this, or maybe I need to have something like this. I live on the East Coast, and maybe we need to have something like this, you know, where we live, and they would be able to contact you. So, Ileana, I just want to say thank you so, so much for sharing this hour with me. I've really enjoyed learning so much about this with you.
Well, thank you, Marcia. I enjoyed myself as well.
Oh, it's just great. All right, everybody, you know what you can do. Check out this website. See if you're able to donate, or maybe you just have a whole bunch of pet toys that you can't use anymore. There's all kinds of ways of being involved. So reach out and see how you can help. And until next week, I'm going to let Ileana go back to her dogs and cats and turtles and everybody else that she's caring for. And I'll look forward to having you all joining me again next week. Thanks so much, everybody, for being with me all these years. I'm so grateful. Have a great week. Bye for now.